Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. So stay tuned. This is a time of the year when we have guarantees. We had a guaranteed election last week, which with the election was guaranteed. The results weren't. Today we are very fortunate to have with us a dear, lovely lady friend of mine, Liz Gallops, who has been with us how many times, Liz? I'll turn the microphone on.
Oh, four or five times, okay. I think. Yeah.
She drove in from Winston-Salem. You don't even live there. You
no.
work there. And you live the
in
other
Raleigh,
So you spend a lot of time on the highway.
I do.
And with us also joining our conversation is the treasurer of WCOM, Ernie Hood, who is also the host of Radio in Vivo, which is a science show. And I don't think there's any other station in the area that has a science show, correct?
As far as I know.
So you're the guy.
It would seem that way.
Okay. So Liz is a member and a very active executive in the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters. She was president of that group. She was president of the North Carolina Association of Health Underwriters. And what are you doing nationally with the National Association?
Nationally, I'm just helping out with some committee work now, so a little bit of a break.
Well, weren't you kind of running an element in the National to get young people involved?
Yes. Our industry is an aging industry, so I've been working for several years with our national office to help engage more younger agents and brokers into the industry.
You think that's working?
I think it is. I think as agents start to age out and sell their blocks of business and look to hand off the reins of their company to somebody else, then it creates great opportunity for young agents.
Well, that's interesting because way back in the 60s when I was looking for a job, I'd been in the Army and I had another job, first year job, and I didn't like it. So I went to a friend of mine who was an employment agent, and I said, I'd like to have a job somewhere in the business world where I can kind of be helpful to people. And this is where I landed. I was introduced to group insurance in Connecticut, and what you do, Liz, is you help people.
Correct. Yes, I help and educate individuals. That's really what I see my role as, is quite literally as an advisor to them to help them purchase something that we all don't necessarily like to buy and hope we will never need or use, but all kind of need to have running in the background, which is our health care and our health insurance.
Well, it's interesting because people don't look at insurance agents necessarily with an attitude of gratitude. It's more an attitude, oh, I got to buy something from these.
Depends on the agent, maybe.
but the work that you do is so helpful. You say it's helping and it's educating.
Correct. Okay. It's a complex field. It's been made even more complex over the last few years, and the next few years will bring even more change. And so it helps for folks to have an advisor that they trust that they can go to and get reliable, accurate information.
Yeah. Ernie has been involved in health insurance as a customer for a while, right?
Yes, indeed. All too much.
But we all need health. You're not. Some of us are old enough not to need to worry too much about buying it because Uncle Sam provides what is known as Medicare, and we'll talk about that later. But Liz, what prompted you to decide to do this?
I was kind of drafted into this field, if you will. My mother has been in the industry for, I don't want to date her now, but going on close to 30 years. And so when I had completed graduate school, they asked if I would like to come and join them at their agency. And I told myself I would give it 5 years. And if I didn't like it, I could go back to my original field of study. And if I did like it, then great, I had a career. And it's been 10 years now.
Wow. So what was your original field of study?
Higher education administration.
Okay. Well, you're educating a lot of us with your knowledge of health insurance. And health insurance is only part of the whole world of health care. And we'll talk about some of that later. But since you're involved with individuals so much, what's happening with your clientele in the state and other states with rate rate problems, insurance companies back. Tell us what's going on.
Sure. I mean, since the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, obviously there's been a lot of changes in the way that we purchase health insurance and the way that health insurance is sold. Each year we continue to see what kind of regulatory changes are going to come down the pike. I mean, we're still in a period where we're trying to reach some stabilization in the market. We are in open enrollment, in case you didn't know it. Guess what? You're in open enrollment.
Right.
And so if you purchase your individual health insurance, or if you purchase your health insurance as an individual, now is the time to be looking at what options and carriers might be out there. And more so than ever, it is important to make an educated choice, because mm-hmm. we've seen where the days of great big PPO networks where you didn't have to worry a whole lot about...
PPO, tell us what PPO means.
Preferred Provider Organizations.
Okay.
Basically, that's what we had in North Carolina for
many
years.
Preferred providers are the medical, the doctors.
Correct.
Okay.
And essentially, those networks were very large. People didn't have to worry a whole lot about whether or not their doctors were in network or their hospitals that they wanted to go to were in network. But one of the ways since... the cost of health insurance has escalated because the cost of health care has escalated. The only way that the carriers can really control cost is by narrowing these networks. And mm-hmm. so networks are becoming a crucial part of the consumer's decision-making process, whereas 5-6 years ago, you didn't really have to worry about it. You could assume that, you know, most of our major hospitals would be in network and our big physician practices. That is not the case anymore. Much more limited networks than what we've had in the past.
Well, now there's only one insurance company selling individual insurance in this state, right?
Actually, we have three.
Oh, we do?
We have three. So Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina is operating in all 100 counties.
Okay,
thank you,
all the
Blue
counties.
Cross Blue Shield. They're the only ones who are doing that.
Uh-huh.
And they are available both on the marketplace, which is through healthcare.gov, and off the marketplace. So if you don't qualify for tax credits, that's probably how you'd purchase it, is off the marketplace. In 5 counties here and around the triangle, we also have Cigna to choose from.
Oh, Cigna's still
mm-hmm.
hanging in here.
Cigna came in for the first time on the marketplace. We've had them off the marketplace for a few years, although they haven't been a huge player off the marketplace. So they are offering a product in 5 counties on and off the marketplace. And then lastly, we have one plan with Aetna.
One lousy plan.
But it is available in almost 50 counties, so it's available in about half the state. So if you don't qualify for tax credits, I would say take a look at Aetna as well, because they are an option off the marketplace.
Okay. Now, explain on the marketplace and off the marketplace so people will understand what the difference is.
Sure. On the marketplace essentially means through healthcare.gov, through the health insurance federal marketplace, which
okay.
is what we use here in North Carolina. Some states have their own marketplace that they operate.
Mm-hmm.
Here in North Carolina, we use the federal one. For both Blue Cross Blue Shield and Cigna, who are two on-marketplace carriers, they offer the same exact plans at the same exact price, whether you're purchasing it through healthcare.gov or purchasing it just direct through them or direct through an agent, right? So same exact plan, same exact prices. The difference with healthcare.gov is you take the extra step to see if you would qualify to get tax credits, which is essentially federal dollars that help pay for your premium on
a
monthly basis.
Okay, and there's levels of income that determine whether you get a subsidy or not.
Correct. Those tax credits, you'll hear people call them subsidies.
That's
like you did, Bill.
But it is a tax credit?
It is a tax
it's
credit.
It's not money sent to you.
No. It is not sent directly to you. It is sent to the carrier of your choice. If you want to take them in advance, what we call advanced premium tax credits, if you want to take them in advance. So to give you an example, if I as a consumer, go out and purchase a plan through healthcare.gov and qualify for tax credits. Let's say I qualify for, I'm going to make up a number, $300 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I can choose to take those tax credits in advance, which means that $300 is sent directly to the carrier of my choice
mm-hmm.
to reduce the cost of my health insurance, and I'm just left paying the rest of the premium if there is any.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's in advance. You can also take those tax credits back on your tax return. So if I go and I qualify for tax credits for next year, 2017, and don't take the assistance on the front end, then when I go to file my 2017 tax return, I'll get those tax credits back on my tax return. And then you can also split the difference too. So this happens less often, but you can split the difference and say, I'll take $150 up front, send it to my insurance company, and I'll take the rest of it back on my tax return as well.
So is it working? Is the government doing what they're supposed to do? Are they on time with all these things?
In regards to the tax credits, at least from the consumer perspective, yes. But there has to be education about whether or not you actually qualify for the tax credits. And that was kind of one of those hiccups that we heard about, especially in the first 2 years
mm-hmm.
That tax credits were in play. You would hear the horror stories of people qualifying for tax credits, getting the money, and then finding out the hard way on their tax return that they actually didn't qualify. So the application through healthcare.gov is supposed to screen to make sure nobody gets tax credits if they don't qualify. But honestly, people can just make judgment errors when they're answering the questions, thinking they're answering it correctly, but perhaps they don't. And so they could mistakenly qualify for tax credit. So if you are not 100% sure whether or not you qualify, please, please, please talk to a professional and make sure that you qualify, because folks are qualifying for thousands of dollars,
mm-hmm.
tens of thousands of dollars of tax credits, and you do not want to have to be stuck repaying those back at the end of the year because you answered a question incorrectly or you misunderstood what they were asking.
It's kind of complicated for, you know, for a lot of us. I
mm-hmm.
mean, of course, I don't have to worry about that. And Ernie, are you considering several different sources for yourself?
I am, absolutely. And hopefully I'll be getting some help from Liz on all this, because I'm starting to get that deer in the headlights look, you know, about this whole subject matter. I think people don't really appreciate, perhaps, at least I didn't, how complicated
mm-hmm.
this really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more than just does your income fall into the range to qualify. There's other life factors that could kick you out. Qualify or being enrolled in VA benefits. Being enrolled in Medicare, that's one of the biggest questions that we receive is, oh, I'm in Medicare, can I qualify for these tax credits? No,
no.
You cannot. or I'm enrolled in the VA system, but I don't really use their benefits. If you're enrolled, that can disqualify you from the tax credits. And then another big one that gets people a lot is that they have access to group health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that more often than not is a disqualifier. There's certain instances where having access to group health insurance through work does not disqualify you, but more often than not it does. And so what we run into are families where one spouse is working
mm-hmm.
and is on the health insurance plan at work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other spouse goes, this is too expensive for us to cover the family through Bob's job.
Uh-huh.
So let me go ahead and see if I can get the family covered through healthcare.gov. They go through the questionnaire and the question asks, do you have access to group health insurance? Well, the spouse may innocently answer, well, no, Bob does, but for me, it's way too expensive. It's not affordable, right, for me to be covered through Bob's job. So they innocently answer the question and qualify for tax credits that they're not actually eligible for. And that got a lot of people in the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Well, so you've been doing this for 10 years, you said. What's the real difference between today and let's say 8 years ago.
Oh, it's night and day between today and 8 years ago. And who knows what 8 years from now is going to look like as well. So, you know, there's have been some great benefits with ACA. I mean, children being able to stay on the parents' plan till age 26, no pre-existing health conditions. I mean,
that's
a lot
the biggest
of,
thing as right. far as I'm concerned. No pre-existing
right.
conditions are excluded.
Correct. But how do you do that? How do you maintain that and still have a viable pool? Because insurance is risk versus premium in its simplest context. Right. And so if you don't know what the risk is because you've guaranteed it to everybody, then how do you go ahead and factor in the premiums? And how do you offset that premium cost? So there have been a lot of great things with ACA. There were a lot of great things with the industry pre-ACA. So it's a matter of trying to find that balance of what can we do next to keep some of the great parts, but perhaps not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, didn't we have a fairly good system in North Carolina prior to ACA where everybody who might have a problem, health problem, getting health insurance, we had a pool, a state pool that put people in, so nobody really was excluded.
We had what was called a high-risk pool. Now, it was actually fairly new pre-ACA. So it's something that I wish our state had implemented a long time ago. But once it was implemented, it was working very well for us, where if you got turned down for coverage by a traditional insurance carrier, you could apply to the high-risk pool, and the rest of us consumers who were buying traditional health insurance were actually subsidizing their high-risk pool. Whether you knew it or not, you were actually subsidizing the high-risk pool, and we had rate decreases.
Well, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should subsidize it to help people get insurance.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, there were challenges with the high-risk pool, too. For example, it was just one carrier with one network, so it didn't allow a whole lot of change and flexibility for folks who were using multiple hospital systems, using multiple doctors. So there were things that needed to be tweaked with that model as well.
Well, now the big publicity in the country over the last year has been, or last 6 months at least, has been this so-called huge rates, rate increases for individual insurance, which is your marketplace. So what's happening? What do you recommend for people who are facing a 25% cost increase to their health insurance?
Correct. And I think this is probably the toughest year that we've faced as a state when it comes to the rate increases. I mean, we had fairly high rate increases last year, but they didn't feel as painful because the starting price was lower. But we had a big rate increase last year. You put another big rate increase on top of it this year and limit the choices, which we just talked about. They're only being, in some parts of the state, there's only one choice.
Right.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So you're limiting the opportunity for consumers to be able to shop. I would just say do your homework. If you can qualify for the tax credits inside healthcare.gov, go ahead and take them while we suspect there will still be a healthcare.gov for at least one more year, right? Go ahead and take them. Shop around. You might have to make some compromises. It may be giving up a certain specialist that you like to use, but if they're not in your network and you can save 10% by going to a different network, well, you might have to make some hard choices, unfortunately.
These are tough things for individuals to figure out, though.
Correct.
Because we haven't spent much of our life ever thinking about these things. You go to your doctor, and your doctor says, I want you to see specialist A. You go to specialist A. And in network or not network, all of a sudden you're stuck with prices or costs or bills from specialists that you weren't expecting.
Correct. People have been very laissez-faire about their health insurance because it's either been provided to them by an employer or, like you said, we didn't have to worry about networks before.
Right.
But when you're talking about seeing premium prices that are equal or greater than people's mortgage, it means making an educated decision. You wouldn't go out and buy a new house without researching the neighborhood and going to an expert, right? And we're talking about spending the same amount of dollars out of our pockets in many cases. I have clients that spend more on their health care premium than they spend on their mortgage.
Wow.
And so that is the reality that we're in right now. So you can't be nonchalant about it anymore. You have to be a consumer, and you have to be willing to do the research and become educated on it.
Well, where do you have thoughts, and do you discuss it with others in the field about an ideal direction we should be heading?
Well, I think our industry, as many players, will have input into what the next administration's ideas around healthcare are going to be. Obviously, our professional association, the National Association of Health Underwriters, as well as other insurance industry associations are going to be very vocal about what direction we think this should go in and what we need to do to preserve the consumer's right to purchase fairly priced health insurance. Yeah.
Well, of course, the new president-elect has made bold statements, just like the existing president did way back when he started this, about good benefits, everybody covered, and lower cost, which none of that worked. So it would be great to have everybody covered. Now, there are a lot of people that figure we should have a single-payer system like some countries in other parts of the world have,
correct,
including our neighbor north of us.
And the government is already the single greatest provider of health care in our country when you look at Medicaid and Medicare.
Right. Mm-hmm. So is that a possibility?
I don't know that it's a possibility under this administration. Again, 8 years from now, could it be a trend that we move towards? Sure. But I think there's always going to be a place for some type of private health care, just like what you see in Medicare now. Mm-hmm. There is a base level of coverage that's provided by the federal government, but it's not holistic coverage. So that's where your private policies come into play. So we could see coming to some kind of middle ground like that.
Which is what I have as a Medicare person.
Correct.
I have private policy through AARP, through United Healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So the insurance companies are still functioning. I don't know whether your profession as agents, how they will fit in this pattern.
Well, agents sell the Medicare plans mm-hmm. and get compensated on it. So, in fact,
do you sell it?
I do. Uh-huh. And as you see the commissions being cut, either
you mean for the existing plan?
For individual right. under mm-hmm. 65 plans or non-Medicare plans, I should say. Mm-hmm. As we see the commissions cut there, you're actually seeing kind of a greater shift of agents moving over to helping the Medicare population and help enrolling there because that is a still very stable market. It's a very predictable market. And there's still viable commissions in there. And Medicare is just as complex, if not more complex,
yeah.
than the individual non-Medicare market. And so, again, there's that need for a professional advisor that folks can go to and trust and help navigate through that whole Medicare world.
We're listening to a conversation. It's not really a monologue, but you have all the answers. with Liz Gollops, she represents the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters and the National Association of Health Underwriters also. And she comes to us from an agency in Winston-Salem, but she covers the whole state, I guess.
In part. Depends on what it is, yes.
And she's been in the business for 10 years. Her parents have been very active in the business, and I know them both. And I kind of consider you the royal family of health insurance in this area. So the National Association of Health Underwriters has how many members?
Oh, gosh, 20,000 maybe.
Mm-hmm. And how many clients, I wonder?
Oh, I don't even know.
How many clients do you have?
Well, I mean, my own individual block of business, so all my individual clients, probably close to 500
okay.
individual clients.
So not everybody deals with individual clients. Your mother deals with employer group.
Correct.
Basically.
So our agency, for example, deals primarily with employers. I'm the only one who works with individuals. And, you know, we have a few hundred employer groups that mm-hmm. we work with as well. So
you're saying the National Association has 20,000 members, and if each member like you has 100 clients, depending on what their market is,
mm-hmm.
so there's a lot of people that depend on insurance agents mm-hmm. to advise them.
Even if they don't know it. If you're getting your benefits at work, odds mm-hmm. are there's an agent who is
right.
helping that HR department, that small business owner, pick out plans and benefits for mm-hmm. the staff. And now our employer side of the house has already gone through most of the big changes related to ACA, so they've started to stabilize out quite a bit. Although if you felt a lot of pain maybe 2 or 3 years ago with your employer benefits, that's probably why, because they got hit first with mm-hmm. the transition into ACA, but they're stabilizing out. Us on the individual side, we came in later to all the implementation with ACA. That wasn't until 2014 that that first went into play. So we're still in that transition phase. Now with the new administration, I think both sides, both employer coverage and individual coverage, are going to start to see some interesting regulatory changes.
Well, speaking of regulatory changes, every week I get a, you do too, you're a member of the National Association of Health Underwriters, I get an announcement of things that happened in Washington that week. And usually there is one or two new regulations.
Correct.
And you as an agent and you, Ernie, as a customer, and me as a Medicare participant, are all affected by one or more of these regulations.
Correct, whether you know it or not, yes.
And just wait.
Well, how do you as an agent translate regulations to your clients, or can you pretty much avoid it because they get letters from the insurance company and all that stuff?
No, I mean, we do a lot of education, and a lot of the education is what we know as of today, because there's so many regulatory changes that come out so often. And so all we can do is make decisions based off of the rules that we know today. I mean, I've had instances where a client and I made a decision based off a regulation that we knew that day, and then 8 months down the road, the regulatory rules changed, and man, we wish we had made the other decision. But we can't go back. We have to play by the rules that we know of today, and which makes it tough to predict what's going to happen, obviously, towards the end of 2017 and going into 2018, as people go, well, now with a new president-elect, a new administration, what's going to happen next? We don't know. We just don't know. And anybody who tells you that they do know, I don't know that
they're
I wouldn't completely believe them, because a lot of things happen, not only from a law perspective, but the devil's in the detail, and that's where the regulatory compliance comes in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen your father is an expert on IRS forms, and he gave a presentation to the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters about IRS forms. Then he came over here and talked in this microphone that you're using and tried to tell a listening audience, including me, about the IRS changes. This was a year ago,
yes.
I guess. And, you know, these things, when the IRS puts out new forms, whoever uses forms have to follow the suit. And,
correct.
And they were way behind in their forms or something. I mean, they did a change the form and didn't print any or something, your dad
yeah.
said.
And I can't even keep up with the forms either. I mean, we all have our niche and our area that we can be an expert in. But as we all play by the same rules for more and more years, it'll become simpler and it'll become the new normal. But right now, we're still in a transition phase. And now with a new administration, we'll be in another transition phase. So it's going to be a while before we're all playing by the same rules and have a good grasp on what the new normal is.
Well, weren't you kind of in the new normal by now, though?
Not for individual under 65. I mean, we're
really?
Still, rules are still changing. For example, last week, they came out with some new regulations around short-term medical plans. So we found that some people
Who sells them?
Agents and brokers.
I mean, who are the insurance companies?
You'll see some of the big name companies like United Healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina, just to name some of the more common, you know, bigger names in the area. But short-term medical plans pre-healthcare reform were originally intended to help people bridge between employer coverage. You know, maybe I have 90 days to wait at my new job before I'm covered. So let me get this short-term medical plan instead of paying for COBRA. Right. That was the original intent. However, with the escalating rate increases, some people found it unaffordable to be able to purchase health insurance. And so what they would do instead is they'd buy one of these short-term medical plans, which they could carry up to almost a year. And they would use that as essentially catastrophic coverage to cover them in the case of unforeseen accident or illness. High deductibles. They still had health questions that you had to pass in order to be enrolled. And the federal government would still consider you uninsured if you were on one of these.
So health short-term plans are not part of the ACA.
Correct. They are not
major
medical.
They're allowed to be sold, though.
Correct. However, folks quickly found out that people were using these as a way to bypass purchasing major medical insurance, what we would call minimum essential coverage, major medical insurance through the ACA. And so the new regulations just came out, again, about a week ago, that go into place, or are supposed to go into place, now that we are going to have a new administration, we'll see, but are supposed to go into place January 1st with a start date of April 1st. You can't purchase these plans for 360 days anymore. You can't do that. You can only purchase them to up to 90 days. And that's their way of keeping...
So that's really short-term.
Really short-term, which their name implies.
Yeah.
But it's to keep people from using it as a backstop so that they don't have to participate with a healthcare reform compliant plan.
Wow. Well, so I didn't realize... I did see something about that. I didn't realize that these short-term plans were still around.
Yes. I actually have clients who have purchased them because they literally cannot afford to buy a major medical health insurance plan, either because they make too little or they make too much to qualify for the tax credits and it's still too expensive. But they don't want to go uncovered. They want to at least have something that protects them and their family in case of that $100,000 hospital claim, mm-hmm. right? And that's what they're intended to do.
So when you have a client that has a big fat rate increase from Blue Cross, let's say, and they're facing this problem, you can help them temporarily with these short-term plans until they decide what to do with their regular plan.
They would have to make a commitment to that's the option that they want to do for the calendar year.
It's calendar year, but now it's changing.
Correct. But remember, we only have a short open enrollment time frame for healthcare reform compliant plans. Open enrollment ends January 31st. So if somebody chooses not to participate in a healthcare reform compliant plan and they don't sign up before January 31st, then they're going to be theoretically locked out of buying a major medical plan for the rest of the year, unless they have a life event.
So anybody that needs health insurance would need to get it before January 1st.
Correct.
That's what you're saying,
yes.
Ernie.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, open enrollment ends January 31st. So if you're not covered or you haven't made decisions about how you'll be covered next year, you need to do something before January 31st or else you're locked in.
Boy, are we learning
January
a lot.
1st in my case.
Yeah.
That's when I lose.
You lose the other one, right.
That's true.
You're listening to a very interesting discussion on WCOM with Liz Gallops. This is your community station. We serve live everybody in Carborough and Chapel Hill on 103.5. We serve the worldwide on WCOMFM.org. And we hope there are some listeners elsewhere today. All of you listening, you also have an opportunity to support WCOM. You can go to our website, wcomfm.org, which I just mentioned, and you can make a safe and secure donation to the radio station. We are a nonprofit service. Everyone who works here is a volunteer, and any money that you give to this station is fully tax deductible. So you can go to our website, as I mentioned, or you can stop by here at 300 East Main Street in Carborough, North Carolina, and slip a check in an envelope under the door. And Ernie Hood, who is sitting right here, who handles our funds, will properly give you credit.
Absolutely. Bring it on.
So that's our story, folks. We're not through yet, but I just want to understand that we are very grateful for people who do support this station, and without your support, there would be no station and no conversations with people like Liz Gallops, who, boy, Liz, the way you know this stuff drives me nuts. Since I moved to North Carolina, I haven't done much in the way of selling health insurance except long-term care insurance, mm-hmm. and I don't think I could have functioned the way you're doing it. All I did was group insurance back in the old days.
I would not want to answer any questions about long-term care insurance. So that is not my expertise. So it goes both ways.
You're not ready for it yet. Okay, so now Paul Ryan, who is the present Speaker of the House, mm-hmm. has put out a mm-hmm. plan.
Correct.
Which talks about things like vouchers and so forth. Have you got any thoughts about that? Have you looked at it enough to...
We have, and when I say we, I refer to the National Association of Health Underwriters. Uh-huh. Yes, we've looked at it. I think it's too soon to make judgments about it because the initial draft was a combination of a lot of folks' ideas, which some of them may be contradictory to each other even. So,
oh, really?
There, I think it was a way to show the potential options, but not necessarily a firm outline of a plan. So we're also going to have to see how well Ryan works with the Trump administration as well, mm-hmm. to kind of cull these ideas. Obviously, Trump has promised things to certain supporters, but once you're in office, all that can change. So still a little up in the air. And again, our association, along with every trade association that has a hand in the delivering of health care and health insurance, is going to have an opinion about how the next rounds of regulations and everything are going to be implemented.
So is group insurance for employers as complex as individual insurance?
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's why you usually see specialization. Either an agent works predominantly with group benefits or the agent works primarily with individuals and Medicare.
So what's the idea of these enrollment periods as opposed to letting people come and go or enroll at their pleasure?
Well, since everybody's guaranteed accepted now, you have to be able to control when people are allowed to purchase health insurance, or else, in theory, they will only purchase it when they need it. And so the risk there is very, very high. So that's why we have these kind of stringent enrollment periods. I have worked with several folks who have called in the middle of the year and said, oh, I need health insurance, and I ask if they've had any in the past and how long ago it was, and they've said it's been, you know, 6 months, a year since I had health insurance. Well, they're locked out into the next open enrollment period because we don't want people purchasing health insurance just when they need it and then turning around and dropping it. Oh. Imagine what that would do to the cost of health insurance.
Well, that's been some accusations about that anyway.
Mm-hmm. There have.
People buying it even during the enrollment period and then dropping out after they've used it and gotten their surgery done and so forth.
It is. And the carriers will tell you that folks that purchase outside of open enrollment produce a lot more claims than folks who actually purchase it during open enrollment, with the thought there being people who are buying it in the middle of the year are coming in under these special enrollment periods to buy it just so that they can use it and then turn around and dump it. So the carriers have really cracked down on when you're allowed to buy these policies, which are the rules set by the federal government, not set by the carriers.
Right.
But the carriers in the past would take you at your word as to whether or not you had one of these life events. They're now requiring proof of the life event taking place, like proof that you just moved or proof that you lost your insurance at work, proof that you just had a child. Whatever the life event is, they're no longer taking you at your word anymore. They're really trying to make sure that people who buy health insurance outside of open enrollment are buying it because they have a life event and not just because they need to go have a surgery done and plan to drop it in a month.
Well, how frequent do you have people coming to you off enrollment period looking for?
A lot.
You do?
A lot. I would say that my outside of open enrollment, is easily 40% of my business.
Really?
Easily.
So you have to get, these people have to provide proof.
Correct. And so it's my job as an agent to really screen them to make sure that they not only have the life event, but can turn in the proof that they've had this life event.
Okay. Well, now, when the Obamacare, or let's call it the ACA and be nice about it, was set up, the government brought in a cast of characters called navigators.
Yes.
And the navigators were assigned to explain what you do to individual clients. And I've had a couple of these navigators on my radio show, and they couldn't begin to talk like you're talking about all this intricacies. In my opinion, that was another boondoggle big expense that was not necessary, because there are people like you who are trained and licensed and study this product, and that's your profession. And navigators were, maybe they were a waiter in the local restaurant and they were hired to sell health insurance.
We have a pretty strong structure in North Carolina for our assisters and navigators. We run a coalition, actually, of partners that include the carriers, agents, associations and groups that have navigators and assisters, like Legal Aid of North Carolina is a big one, some of our community health centers also. So we actually work in partnership with each other. And the original thought behind the navigators and assisters was there are going to be so many people signing up for health care, right, in the first couple of years, that there's no way that agents could do it all. And agents did make up roughly 50% of healthcare.gov enrollments. Uh-huh. So agents made up a big part of it. So it was nice to have those other volunteers, and some were paid folks as well, to assist and help people get enrolled. You're right. They're not going to have, you know, 10 years of experience like myself working in the industry to be able to answer questions.
Are they still around, though?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're still around. Like I said, we work in partnership with them.
Yeah.
We learn from them. They learn from us. I learned some great stuff about folks who are non-resident aliens coming to the U.S. and how they qualify for health care and how Medicaid works in our state, things that us as agents and brokers maybe don't touch on a whole lot, where they specialize in those subset communities.
Why are they doing that? I mean, I don't quite. What were they given a broader spectrum of things to do, to work with, than you folks?
No, not necessarily. It's just the organizations who have applied and been given grant funding, they usually specialize in a certain particular community. For example, working with, there's one assister group that works just with the Hispanic farm working community here.
Okay, specialized.
Correct. Yeah, so they reach a population that us as agents probably wouldn't reach, and that's kind of where their niche is, and I've been very grateful and fortunate to have them working here in North Carolina. But you're right. As commissions get cut for agents and brokers, and agents think about whether or not they want to be in the industry, it makes it tough when you see other folks who are doing a similar role as you, who aren't making, who aren't dependent upon commission to keep going, although their navigator grant funding could be cut as well and is set to expire as well. So we might be left in 2 years with almost nobody helping consumers, because if commissions are cut for agents and keep going down like they have been, or turn to zero like they have been, then there's not going to be agents licensed to help them.
Right.
And as the grant funding runs out for these navigators, even those volunteers aren't going to be around to help it either.
Uh-huh. So that's
it's a big concern for our group.
It is a big concern. So, what I'm hearing from you, which I didn't realize, is how you cooperate with these other organizations, particularly with the navigator groups who represent certain elements in society.
Correct. You'll even see some agents who go out on enrollment events together with navigators and assisters. Hmm. And they work together to do these enrollment events.
Navigators and assisters, that's another, those are two separate groups?
They are. Navigators mean that they're actually receiving grant funding from the federal government to enroll people in healthcare.gov. Assisters are people who are paid by an outside organization who isn't getting grant funding. So, for example, you might see a hospital might have assisters on staff to help people get signed up for health insurance.
So these people are actually there, and you don't really compete with them, though, do you?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I guess you could say that we're competing because we're all, you know, trying to get as many people enrolled in health insurance as possible. But like I said, they really target a particular niche population that us as agents and brokers might not otherwise
and
get
to.
And
they have social agendas.
Correct. Yeah. And in fact, the navigators and assisters actually went through a bit of a rough spot having volunteers to help enroll folks for this open enrollment, because so many people were focused on the campaigns. And so people who might otherwise volunteer, or that they might hire part-time for open enrollment to help them get folks signed up, those folks were actually helping volunteer on political campaigns. And so they even had a shortage.
Wow. So what about these young millennials who say, screw you, I'm not going to buy health insurance, and they willing to pay a fine?
Well, eventually the penalty will get to such that it's actually cheaper to buy health insurance. So eventually. That's
what
we
hope.
How's
that work?
That penalty. Sure. So the penalty is assessed per uninsured person in your household. Kids are half of an adult. And the penalty is the greater of $695 or 2.5% of your household income. Now, they cap that. So if your household's making $1 million, okay, you know, you're not paying, you know, $250,000
so
in penalties.
$600 and what?
$695.
That's the basic fine the first
correct
year.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And doesn't that increase over time? If you
it has increased each year. So this is what the penalty is going to be.
So mm-hmm. how many years does it take you to get to the point where I can't afford the penalty, I'm going to buy health insurance?
I guess it depends on how much the premium is as it relates to how much the penalty is. I mean, obviously, if your penalty is only $695 and it's costing you, you know, $1,000 or $1,200 to buy health insurance, then you might make a decision as to taking the penalty, but mm-hmm. or you might say, you know, that's only a $600 difference. Let me go ahead and pay a little $600 extra and actually have some health insurance.
So, what do you have? You had conversations with these people in your
with the millennials?
Yeah, with these decision makers.
I get some millennials, not a whole lot. That's just not a demographic that I, you know, seek out a whole lot.
I would think a parent that you might have might refer their child to you.
Correct. That's usually what we get. And in those cases, a lot of times you still see the parents subsidizing the price of the insurance for their kids.
Okay.
They'll pay it for them, you know. But if you're under the age of 30, you can qualify for a different level of plan. So all of our health insurance plans are now lumped into medal categories. Think the Olympics, right? Bronze, silver, and gold.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Okay. We used to have platinums, but we don't have any platinums in North Carolina anymore.
Why is that?
None of the carriers wanted to provide them anymore. I don't think they're not
available.
Correct.
I see,
yeah.
Okay.
So they're just not available. But there's an additional category outside of the medal plans that's available for folks that are young, 30 and under, right? And that's called a catastrophic plan, which I don't particularly care for the name because it implies that it's worst-case scenario coverage, and it's uh-huh. actually coverage that's better than a bronze, but not quite as good as a silver. And the rates on them are fantastic because it's all a bunch of young people who don't use health insurance buying the plan.
Yeah.
So if you're a young invincible, take a look at one of those catastrophic plans because it could give you access to some affordable health insurance. You'll have access to a limited number of copays for sick visits, and the rates are great.
Is that an ACA?
Yes.
Plan?
Okay. Yep. So all, and I like to tell folks because folks say to me, "Oh, well, is that Obamacare?" And I say, anything that's new that's been sold since January 1st of 2014 is Obamacare. So we almost all of us have Obamacare at this point, right? We almost all of us have an ACA compliant plan, whether we know it or not.
Well, that's been the Achilles heel of the ACA right from the start and has only gotten worse, that many of the young and healthy, or not enough of them, are signing up in sufficient numbers to sustain the whole
the pool.
The system.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. And you need those healthy folks to pay premiums and balance out the costs for those that are sicker. So unless we see some controls on the actual cost of health care, I don't see how health insurance is going to drop. We can change how we're funding it, like, for example, through tax credits. But until we rein in the actual cost of health care, I don't know how health insurance premiums are expected to drop.
Well, health care overall is part of our government's domestic product, and health care is a bigger chunk of inflation than mm-hmm. anything else. And I don't understand that. I don't understand. I'm not an economist. I probably could find an answer from some of the professors over here at the Carolina University. But why does health care increase its inflation faster than grapefruit or because food prices are down now.
Sure. Well, we have access to greater options in healthcare now. We have access to greater surgeries and procedures than we've ever had before. And the model does not lend itself to consumerism. You know, it's hard to go, all right, I need an MRI. Where should I shop around for an MRI? Especially if you have restrictions on network. Even worse is, what if you're in an unexpected hospitalization situation? Well, you're not in a position to be able to even ask those questions. The healthcare industry itself doesn't lend itself to consumerism and to shopping like it should. I mean, how many of us actually know what the real price is of healthcare?
Right.
And when you have a system set up, for example, even with the most basic of healthcare, like going to see your primary care doctor for a sick visit, where you pay $25 to go in and see them, you don't know that the real operating cost to go in and see that doctor is more like $125. Mm-hmm. And so once you are on some of these plans that we're seeing coming out now with high deductibles, where you're on the hook first dollar for expenses, that's the only time where people start thinking about and really making educated decisions about, do I need to go to the doctor for this, or could I call the nurse hotline and get treated for it instead? But if you're in an emergent situation, you don't even have feedback into what's going to happen to you. If you're in the ER or emergency hospitalization, you're not thinking about, is this doctor in network? Is this right? How's this procedure right going to be covered? Can I shop around? So it's expensive.
Well, you've been in this a while, and things like nurses' hotlines, which I called once, and I got terrific service.
As do I, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And these things are new, kind of, in the last 10
years, yeah.
Even mm-hmm. before Obamacare.
Yeah.
So how do they fit? Do you feel that these things have been valuable in your dealing with your clients?
Oh, sure. Anytime you can help somebody take control of their healthcare costs and teach them to be more of an educated consumer, it only benefits them. It could be something as minimal as, you have a $10 copay for a generic. Well, a lot of places have a $4 and $9 generic list. So why not find out if that drug is actually $4 if you cash pay for it, as opposed to running it through your insurance and paying a $10 copay? There's little things like that that you can do as a consumer to kind of take control of your health care, and using nurse hotlines, using wellness programs, using teledoc programs, which is similar to a nurse hotline, except you can actually, it kind of goes a step further with a teledoc, where you actually speak and can get prescriptions and things like that prescribed to you. Using those services to take control and actually making educated decisions about your health care, as opposed to just going into the doctor because, what the heck, it only cost me $10, right? Or let me get that prescription filled, even though I don't actually plan to use it, because, what the heck, it only cost me $5. You know, making actual real decisions about your health care, I think, will help drive the cost down, but we have to go a lot further. And again, I think one of your UNC economists would be
okay, thank you.
The appropriate resource for that.
We're supposed to finish our shows 5 minutes before the hour, so before we get to that five-minute break and ask Liz to give us a 30-second summary of everything she said, I would like to tell you that this show has been supported by retired Ambassador Michael Cotter. Mike has been on the show 10 or 12 times. You know him, Ernie.
Absolutely.
And he's one of the underwriters of this show. Another underwriter of this show is the Triangle Association of Health Underwriters, which we, you and I, Liz, mm-hmm. are members. Another underwriter is a person in this little town who says she will support community radio until the end of time. That's what I call a real support. Next week, we have scheduled a conversation about clean air. I'm mm-hmm. not sure that conversation is going to take place, because I got word that the person who was scheduled to be here may have to go to some out-of-state conference. So you'll get your notice in the mail, in your email, you folks who are on my regular list, and we will be discussing clean air, maybe, or we may not be. So, Liz, you are dynamite. You have to go back to your family now. You've came from your office in Winston-Salem, and you're driving another 50 miles or 40 miles, and I hope somebody's going to prepare dinner for you.
I hope so, too.
Well, you've been great to come here, and I so much, it's so great to listen to you.
Thank you.
Ernie, did you learn something?
Oh, a lot. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Well, that's it, folks, and we're going to sign off. I see L.A. is hanging out somewhere in the other office here, so the Bachelor Pad comes next, and we will see you next Monday at 5 p.m., and that's it for today. Thanks again.
Thank you.